Good afternoon. We'll call to order the House Committee on Rules for Monday, February 18. We're going to start and get Senator Beyer up because he has another committee he's supposed to preside over. So we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2470. Senator Beyer, please. Ms. Seiler, what is this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2470 extends the tax credit for the Trust for Cultural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, I am Lee Beyer, State Senator from District 6, which is includes Representative Barnhart's half his district and Representative Lively's as well. I'm here today to testify most positively on House Bill 2470, which is the sunset bill on the Cultural Trust of Oregon tax credit. I'll give you a little history. This one goes back to the late 1990s, I think it was 99, when we had a task force that I co-chaired with then State Representative Ben Westland. And we spent 18 months looking at ways to try and improve Oregon's public contributions to culture and arts in this state. At that time, when we were looking at it, of all of the states and protectorates of the United States, Oregon ranked 54th in contribution to culture and art, public support of culture and art in Oregon. We thought that was abominable and thought we ought to do something about it. We spent a lot of different ways looking at how to do that, and we ended up with a bill which included really three basic funding streams. One was the Oregon Cultural Trust license plate, which you've seen obviously on the roads. Another was the sale of a public building that really ended up never occurring. And the third was a tax credit. And the tax credit was based on the assumption that there are a lot of private individuals, both small givers and large givers, who give to individual organizations within their communities. Oregon actually has a fairly good record of that, but there wasn't at that time a medium where they could give to a state organization that would help some of the smaller arts groups that weren't not getting arts and culture, I should say. It's not just one across the state. They weren't getting support in the past. So the concept was we would put a program in place, a tax credit, which said if you matched your gift to a local organization with an equal amount to the state, you could get a tax credit for it. And that has worked well, not as well as we hoped it would. And the idea was over time to build a fairly large endowment that would be self-sustaining. That's been slower than we thought, but I think it's working. It's received very positive press. There are a great number of contributors throughout the state, from small to very large. I think you'll hear arguments that say it's been around long enough that we can start reducing it. Or some of these people would give anyway. You know, if you have the list now, the state does, you can make the calls like any other charity and get them to give. I believe strongly that that is not the case. I think it's very hard, you know, having been involved in a number of charitable organizations, it's very hard to convince anybody to give money to a public agency. That's just the way it is. And this is the way that we have managed to make that work. It's working well, low administrative overhead, money gets out there. Some of the money annually goes out, and others go to build the corpus of the fund. I think it's a good effort. I think it's one that we should maintain. It has very little actual impact on the state's general fund. So it's one of those areas and one of those tax credits that I strongly support and have often thought that it's one of the best things that Ben Westland and I did during our legislative careers. Still feel very strongly about that. So, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify. Be happy to answer any questions you might have. If not, I'm off to spend the night talking about a bridge.
Lucky guy.
Thank you, Senator. If you'd rather stay here, we're happy to have you. Any questions for Senator Beyer? This is a much more fun subject than that. Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, I want to inquire, do we have other witnesses?
Several.
Yeah. So then I won't ask the question now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good luck. Is Representative Olson here?
No.
Is Representative
Olson?
No. Okay.
Do you want to go to Chris Alanak from LRO?
Yes, we're going to hear next from Chris Alanak from the Legislative Revenue Office on the revenue impact associated with this tax credit. Mr. Alanak.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I had provided the committee with some background statistics on these two tax credits, so you should have available probably through OLIS.
But can I find that? Where?
Give us a second.
Members, it is under media materials for today's date, and it's the questions political and cultural TER is what it's labeled, and political contributions and cultural trust, the two items that.
Okay, let me find that. Exhibits?
Meeting materials.
No. I'm not finding it. Which bill?
It's under 24/7 for today's session. Did you go through today?
Yes. And then I went to this bill. Am I on the right bill?
Let's see if that doesn't work. Let's try it over here. My dad was right to come in this morning.
No, I haven't found that yet. Okay. This is the meeting material.
Yes. And if you don't, just up to the date.
Okay.
And go to meeting materials.
We have a new computer system, folks. We're learning how to use
it. What are those other things?
Thank you for your patience.
Okay, and which one is he doing?
He's doing these two.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Sorry, Chris.
I think we're ready.
The two documents, the one that has the TER in the name, are just pages from the biennial tax expenditure report. And the other document has some background statistics related to the two tax credits. So I was asked to just provide that background information, and I can walk through it briefly for your information. On the first page of that one, are the two tax credits, the political contributions and the cultural trust provided by AGI level for tax year 2010. And for the political contributions, there were just under 100,000 claimants, and they claimed a total of $6.9 million in credits, and they used $6.4 million credits. And for those who aren't familiar with the distinction between those two figures, claimed and used, claimed is the amount that somebody reports on their tax return, and the amount used is the amount that actually reduces their tax liability. In some cases, taxpayers are able to reduce their tax liability down to zero, so some of the credit will be unused. And then for the cultural trust, about 6,500 taxpayers claimed that credit. They claimed a total of $3.3 million and were able to use $3.2 million. And the AGI breakdown there shows the usage of the credit at the different levels of income. So for the political contributions credit, about 37% of the taxpayers who used it had AGI of at least of $100,000. And then the cultural trust, about 60% of those who used it had AGI of $100,000 or more. So that's just a basic table. And then the other pages there are preliminary information from the Department of Revenue that they had put together, I think last during the summer when they were putting together the tax expenditure report, and it provides different insights into the use of the credit. And each just walk through the political contributions, but the information is the same for the cultural trust, where they provide the credit history for the past six or seven years. They show the number taking the credit, the revenue impact. And then the revenue impact is a percentage of the revenue. There's a more brief table of the use of the credit by income level, and then there's a table by age of the primary filer. And then on the next page, there's a geographical distribution of the credit, so you can see how much gets used in each of the 36 counties. And then there's a bar chart that shows compares the county usage to an average. And then that last table just shows how often, or kind of a repeat customer perspective in terms of claimants of the credit, how many have claimed it for 1 year or up to 5 years. And so there you can see that 40% of claimants claimed it for 1 year, and about 15% of taxpayers claimed it for 5 years. So it's all just very detailed background information on the two credits. And then it's the same type of information for the cultural trust.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Elenick?
Revenue Chair, perhaps?
Mr. Chair, I've reviewed this data before. Mm-hmm. Fairly familiar with it. Simply note that it is used most vigorously by those at the very high income level, the top quintile, and that may give us some hints as to where we might go.
I see. Further questions for Mr. Elenick or comments? Thank you. We appreciate you being here.
Sure.
Background. We'll take public testimony. Again, we're on the cultural tax credit. We'll do the political tax credit separately. We'll just go in order of sign up. Alex Linsker, Kevin Campbell, and Georgia Harker, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alex Linsker, Tax and Conversation from Portland. And I oppose the Cultural Trust, not for what it is. I love the arts and culture. And mainly I'd like to talk about regressive tax and about the economic model used. Every full year tax filing Oregonian would get $700 refund every month if all Oregon and federal income tax was all the exceptions, deductions, credits, if they were all distributed equally per person for every full year tax filer, $700 a person every month. And so Oregon's stated income tax is slightly progressive, but it's actually very regressive when you add in the exceptions. And I've included some footnotes, but a Tax Policy Center has a nice chart. So 66% of all exceptions benefit the people with 20 out of 100 people with the most income. And as you've already looked at, this is regressive in terms of who it benefits. And I was reading the report by Eco Northwest. I read a bunch of reports. I was looking to hire an economic firm, and they were referred highly by a lot of people, and I started reading the reports, and I was trying to understand what's the input-output model that's used in many of Oregon's reports. And it turns out the input-output model, which is used in this and many other economic studies, it doesn't place any value, $0 value, on all government employees. That's 300,000 employees in Oregon who are worth nothing in terms of the view of this study and many studies. And there's another, the firm that makes the software that's used for this actually recommends using another model, not an input-output model, which does value government, values tax, values services provided, values employees. And Oregon's biggest employer, as you know, is government. On page 20 of the report, Oregon Cultural Trust Tax Credit does not measurably increase but may have decreased donations to arts and cultural organizations. So if you want, as I do, donations and contributions to nonprofits in arts, culture, and otherwise, this may be hurting that. The report on page 20, it talks very eloquently and beautifully, page 1 through 16, on the cultural sector. It gives all kinds of statistics, amazing facts. And then page 20, it says we can't tell. It uses the phrase of crowding in or crowding out. It doesn't know. No data. And I think that sums it up. Moving forward, my recommendation would be to use an economic model that values each government job at a one-to-one equivalency for full-time equivalent total salary and benefits. So a teacher earning an average salary of $83,000 a year should be viewed as an employee in Oregon earning more than almost double the average Oregon wage, should be valued as a job. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Yes, Representative Berger.
May I ask, is the Echo Northwest study that you are referencing,
yes,
would you please send us a link to that?
Oh,
I will.
We have it. It's under the bill.
Okay, is it on the bill?
It's under the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And on footnote 4, links to the
I saw footnote 4, but I'm looking for it on my computer. It's on that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. As long as I'm in the bill in there.
Yep. 2501.
Okay. Mr. Campbell.
Under the bill.
Thank you, Chair Garrett. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here today on behalf of the Cultural Advocacy Coalition, speaking in favor of the bill. And you do have a copy of the Eco Northwest study that was commissioned by the Oregon Cultural Trust itself. And so you have that in your files. My purpose today is going to be brief. You have my written testimony. There's a number of people that are here to testify who have direct experience with the benefits of the tax credit, and I'd rather have them do the talking. I will mention that many of them will be testifying for the very first time in front of a legislative committee, and they're looking forward to that. I just want to mention three unique pieces of this tax credit. The first one is that it does have a matching requirement. So while there is a tax credit of $500 for individual filers, $1,000 for joint filers, or $2,500 for corporate filers, in order to access that, they have to give to a cultural organization in the same amount before they can take the tax credit. So in essence, it's a 50% tax credit after you're all through talking about the process. We believe that does encourage additional giving to a wide range of cultural organizations. We feel strongly that the tax credit does accomplish an important purpose in that regard. The second is that we call this a double bottom line tax credit. I mean, one of the reasons that tax credits are used is to direct the resources to places that are of importance to the state. The state has demonstrated their interest and their value in the cultural strength and health of our state. And so the double bottom line is hard to measure when you consider that there's a cultural investment that occurs here that goes beyond the monetary side of this. And I wanted to mention that and point that out. And I'm sure in the testimony you hear today, you'll hear that brought into play as the people that are testifying talk and tell their own stories. Third is another really important result of the tax credit, and that is, as a result of this, county cultural coalitions have been created in every county in the state that are responsible for helping to identify specific priorities in each of the counties for distribution of grants. And in the last 10 years, over $4.2 million has been distributed and over 1,900 grants to very small organizations. These are the kind of small organizations that represent the unique fabric of each county, each cultural and artistic organization within these counties, and they're directed by people that live in the county, care about the county, and have the county's interest at heart. And so, again, in a moment, you'll be hearing from members of that of those county coalitions. They'll talk more about the work that they do. It's all volunteer. They care about their counties, and this tax credit is allowing them to invest strategically in key organizations. We've already talked about the study that was commissioned through Eco Northwest. The goal of that is simply to abide by the requirements of the legislature as it, with regards to making sure that the tax credit is accomplishing its purpose. And so we wanted to make sure we were doing our homework in advance, coming with the materials you expect, both in this committee, and if this committee sends this bill down to the Joint Tax Credit, for the work of the Joint Tax Credit Committee as well. So with that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to turn it over to the real folks to testify regarding their experience. I know there's somebody at the end that will be able to answer technical questions well, and so if you have those, if you don't mind, I'll defer those until they come up, and then I'm going to step down from the dais because I know there's others that will be testifying, two others from the county side. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello.
It's Harker.
I'm Georgia Harker. I'm here as the, I'm the current chair of the Cultural Coalition in Washington County. I do have 15 copies for you, which I will, actually, Debbie, could you please hand them to the administrator? Thank you. They're right in that folder on the floor. Thanks very much. Or I can do it after I come back. Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm here to support in favor, I'm here in favor of HB 2470. I'm also here to tell you how the Oregon Cultural Trust has made a difference in our county and why I think Governor Kitzhaber has recommended that the tax credit be renewed. The Oregon Cultural Trust manages a very unique program in which Oregonians have already made donations to all their favorite libraries, heritage groups, museums, and then they donate a matching amount to the Cultural Trust, and then they can request a tax credit for that amount. All of those donations to the Cultural Trust are then distributed statewide, not just to their county, but all over the state. In our last cycle, our piece of that pie in Washington County was just over $38,000. We received applications from 32 organizations. We're able to award grants to 23 of them. Grants last year from us ranged from $900 to $2,000. Since 2005, our county's group has distributed over $263,076 from the Cultural Trust to nearly 70 organizations in Washington County. And just to be clear, when we say cultural, we're talking about a really diverse collection of projects, events, and aha moments that for thousands of people, happen for thousands of people in Washington County on an almost daily basis. The most exciting part of being a member of the coalition the past few years for me has been the exposure to this amazing breadth of groups that we have in the county doing fantastic things. There are groups like Painted Sky, who increased their access to their native dance labs with their grant. The Willowbrook Center Summer Program and the Broadway Rose Theater Company used their grant money to add openings in their programs for Latino and underserved youth. In rural Washington County, the Helvetia Community Association educates about local history by hosting their Helvetia Cultural Fest. The Hillsborough Community Arts offers free music and performances at their public Showtime at Shoot concert series. And OCT funding has also reached hundreds of people through grants to groups like Friends of the Plains Library with their One Book, One Community program and the brand spanking new Aloha Community Library's summer reading program for children. We also help educators to fund special projects that they couldn't do otherwise with small grants, and such as the ACMA dance performances done last year and performed for school children and the public. These groups all ask for small grants to bridge wide gaps between the many ethnic, socioeconomic, educational, and cultural divides of a very, very diverse Washington County. Their offerings change us, especially when experienced together in our schools, our parks, and our downtowns. They build community and delight, and they pull people out of their homes and into our public places to see, feel, create, and even buy together. That's why this program is a win-win for all. It promotes tourism, entices people to attend public events, it's good for businesses in the area, and it involves and excites people of all ages. It helps us keep the doors open to inspiration, curiosity, and ideas for everyone. OCT helps to fund arts and cultural events that might not otherwise happen in our county. And in these tight economic times, our grants are extremely appreciated and well used. As a former art teacher, I know how very great the need is for more public access culture. Bless you. I realize the state is looking to maximize efficiencies and cut waste to get the biggest bang for our bucks, and I thank you for that. And I realize all tax credits are therefore under scrutiny. That makes sense, especially since most tax credits just put money back into the pocket of one person or one corporation, which may or may not then decide to spend it in ways that help our state. The Oregon Cultural Tax Credit, however, is very different. A taxpayer only gets it if A, they've already given to an Oregon group, and B, if they've given also, again, to the Oregon Cultural Trust, which then donates the money and spreads it all over the state in various projects. It multiplies itself, and it helps to grow for all of us. So thank you for doing the right thing and the cost-effective thing, extending this tax credit so that more people all over the state can benefit. It's a far-reaching program that costs the state little yet rewards thousands of people year-round. Please extend it for everyone's sake. I also strongly agree with Andy Dyke, the chair of the Washington County Board of Commissioners, in his recent letter to our state reps when he said, "Renewing the Oregon Cultural Trust tax credit has a small impact on state resources, but it makes a huge impact on the cultural life of Oregon's communities." He and I both hope you will support the reauthorization of this tax credit. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you both for being here. Oh,
she's new.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes, I'm a new person.
Before you proceed, I want to temporarily close this public hearing, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2407. We're going to do that quickly so Representative Olson can testify on that. He's missing another committee to be here. So we'll hear from him, then we'll go back to the cultural tax credit.
I appreciate that.
Come forward, please, Representative.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2407 extends the sunset of income tax credit for political contributions through January 1, 2020.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I feel special. Okay, I think you all have this. I'm going to read a little bit of it to you. It's my testimony here. But Chair Garrett and committee members, according to a CNN exit poll, first of all, my name is Andy Olson. I'm state representative from the Albany area. And House Bill 2407 is the political tax credit continuation. In this era, when wealthy individuals, unions, and large businesses increasingly use their money to influence the electoral process, it is more important than ever that we recommit ourselves to the principle that our authority comes from the individual people of Oregon. The political tax credit at its core says that we value the decision-making ability of people of Oregon. Any authority that we have in the legislature is derived from the citizens of Oregon and all Oregonians, regardless of their economic situation, and should have a say in choosing their representatives. Additionally, in a time of economic hardship, when a large number of Oregonians are struggling to find work, it is even more important that we reaffirm this principle. This is not in any way a bipartisan bill. This bill allows a citizen to receive a tax credit of $50 when he or she donates to any state political action committee. It leaves the partisan policy decisions to the individual voter. People are free to send their money to any political action committee they choose, regardless of political affiliation. In this way, the political tax credit also promotes electoral involvement. Oregon has long been at the top of the nation in terms of voter participation. Many analysts attribute this to our vote-by-mail system, but I believe that the political tax credit also lends to that point. When a person financially invests in a candidate or cause, they are much more likely to educate themselves about the issues and be active in the political process. And the political tax credit removes the financial barrier that people face to participate in this way. And then finally, thus this bill promotes voter participation, education, and reaffirms an underlying value that our authority comes from the people of Oregon and that all Oregonians are equal and deserve to equally be represented in political process. I urge you to strongly consider moving this forward to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits Committee, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Representative Olson? Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2407. We'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2470. And let's pick up where we left off with Tina Rinaldi. Also, Deborah Olson and J.S. May, you can come forward.
Thank you, Chair Garrett, and members of the committee for allowing me to testify today. My name is Tina Rinaldi, and I don't know if you guys can hear me through this. Okay. Tina Rinaldi, I'm a member of the Lane County Cultural Coalition and have been since 2005. And in my day job, I'm the Managing Director of the Arts and Administration Program at the University of Oregon, where we are primarily a graduate program granting degrees in arts management. And so I am around budding arts managers all day, every day, training them to understand how arts management works in a variety of areas, including cultural policy. And so from that perspective, I'd like to sort of repeat and reiterate what some other people have already said about the Oregon Cultural Trust and sort of the unique thing that we've created here in Oregon. And so I'm going to be a little bit repetitive, but I want to say specifically that it cannot be overstated how unique in cultural policy in the United States it is that we have this matching mechanism, that people, while they may be the most affluent people living in Oregon, there are people living in Oregon who have the ability to give to their local arts heritage and cultural organizations and then give to the Oregon Cultural Trust to receive that tax credit. It really incentivizes and spurs philanthropic giving at the individual level, and so we should be very proud of ourselves as Oregonians that we've been able to do that. The second unique feature that I want to talk about today is the aspect of the fact that one-third of the funds that are expended every year are expended through coalitions, the 36 county and 9 tribal coalitions. And through, as a member of the coalition, the past chair of the Lane County Cultural Coalition, not only is that a unique model in the country for being able to give at the local level state funds, but it allows each coalition to determine, based on what they know about the the environment where they live, where the greatest needs are. So when the Lane County Cultural Coalition created its plan, and it was approved at the state level, which every coalition had to create their own plan, and it had to be approved at the state level, we determined that access, awareness, and education in arts, heritage, and humanities were the most important things that needed to be supported in Lane County. And we knew that we wanted to support broadly across Lane County. All of the counties in Oregon tend to be very large counties. And so we have representatives from every district in the county on the coalition, two members from every district, and we attempt and we succeed, we hope, as well as we can, in distributing those funds widely. Many of our coalition members have already been talking with our legislators about the renewal of the tax credit, which we are all very much in favor of. And some of the feedback that they've been getting from legislators is about what legislative priorities are now in terms of supporting education, which of course is admirable, human services, and various other needs of the state. And so I want to point out that in the last 3 years, 46% of the grants that have been written to us have been for educational programs. So clearly the need is great across the state, and the greatest need in Lane County. And we have been, when I sort of went through and did the count, we have a high percentage, almost half, even though we have three priority areas in education. And so what I wanted to do today, if you'll indulge me, is read from three specific grant requests that we did fund about how they're using these funds to support education. And then when I'm finished reading from those three grant requests, because I really want you to hear from the words of the people who need this money and are using this money, that will conclude my testimony and then the next person can take over. So, from a grant in Cottage Grove. In Cottage Grove, access to arts education for South Lane School District's youth is bleak. Neither Latham nor Harrison Elementary Schools offer arts to its students. Lincoln Middle School offers some arts and crafts electives, while Cottage Grove High School was forced to cut its teacher to half-time. Until we were able to fund the Opal Center for Arts and Education, there was no after-school visual arts program in Cottage Grove. In response to this deficit, the Opal Center for Arts and Education is creating in-school and out-of-school arts education programs for Cottage Grove area students and has sought funds from the Lane County Cultural Coalition to offer these important educational resources for area schools, teachers, and families. Another program. The summer reading program for rural children provides free books, snacks, entertainment, and supervision in weekly summer sessions at 8 rural Lane County locations. Scattered across the county in granges, schools, and community centers from Alvador to Lowell, the sites are in areas that do not have access to public libraries. The programs are run by volunteers overseen by a paid Lane Library League supervisor and use instructional materials recommended by the Oregon State Library. The primary objective of the summer reading program is to improve literacy and school success among children in rural areas of Lane County. A second objective is to promote library use and awareness in rural Lane County with the goal of eventually developing a countywide library system. Currently, 80,000 people in rural Lane County lack access to tax-supported libraries. The third example. The Kennedy Mirror is a creative writing program in A1 Kennedy Alternative School. The school serves the needs of students in South Lane County School District who are unable to thrive in a conventional setting by providing an education centered upon outdoor skills, sustainability, and environmental stewardship. Typically, these at-youth risks have to deal with substance abuse, homelessness, and unstable and dangerous home lives. Kennedy does not have a budget to offer courses in the arts. In this school year, Olive Delsell and Lokiko Hall volunteered to teach a creative writing class one day per week. Interest has been high and consistent from the first day. The class size has grown, and most of the students have carried through from term to term. The class started with a focus on basic skills and free writing. We have progressed to learn root cultural references by examining fiction from its beginning in fable, fairy tale, and myth. The students then wrote examples of each of these forms. In the final term, they became so engaged and excited that they were working to produce Kennedy's first school magazine, featuring their stories, poems, and opinions, as well as articles on what Kennedy students have accomplished in the last year and plan to do in the next. Although the class started as an experiment intended to run for one term, we have kept it going for the entire year. The students talk about their hopes for next year and how they want to expand the publishing side of the class. In the course of the year, we have also organized a field trip to the Eugene Public Library and the Writers Forum, where we invited 7 published writers from Cottage Grove and Eugene to talk about their experiences with their art. Our principal, Tom Horn, credits the writing class with helping Kennedy's pass rate for the state writing test increase by 25%. The teachers of the writing class believe that the school should be able to achieve 100% pass rate within 3 years. So these are the kinds of things that funds at the local level are supporting in arts, heritage, and humanities. And so I urge you to allow Oregonians who want to support the arts to continue giving to their local organizations, continue giving to the Cultural Trust, and continue receiving the tax credit. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Garrett and members of the committee. My name is Deborah Olson. I'm a volunteer member, a citizen member of the Cultural Coalition from Washington County. You've already heard from our chair, Georgia Harker. I recently retired after 40 years of teaching history, 20 at Portland Community College, another 20 plus at Linfield College. And I'm here very, very briefly to say, I hope you'll think about 2 things. The first is, I firmly believe that a culture that supports its art and music programs is a culture that has spirit and a soul. And a culture that fails to support its music and art programs is in danger of losing its spirit and its soul. And as a historian for more than 40 years, I believe firmly that a culture that supports its cultural heritage is a culture with a memory. And a culture that fails to support its cultural heritage, as the Cultural Trust so wonderfully does, is a culture that's in danger of losing its memory. And that's a very serious, worrisome problem. And with all my heart, I urge you to support HB 2470 in its current form. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm J.S. May. I'm the Chief Advancement Officer at the Portland Art Museum. And so I'm here on behalf of large arts organizations who the Cultural Trust makes a tremendous difference to. We've been around since 1892. We're the 7th oldest museum in the country. We're a huge cultural asset to this community. Governmental funding is actually only 1.8% of our current budget, so it's a small amount, but it leverages many things. I want to tell you about 3 projects that have been funded through the Cultural Trust in the last several years. Hopefully some of you were able to get to the museum and see Wild Beauty, photographs of the Columbia River Gorge, a show we did in 2007 that basically looked at the photographic history of that river as a transportation system, as a Native American resource, the salmon. This show, national notoriety, best book published recommendation by the Wall Street Journal, written up in the New York Times. One of the museum's missions is to take culture to Oregon culture to the world, and this is a great example of us showing what Oregon is like to the entire world. Another example, last year, Mark Rothko went to Lincoln High School, is probably one of the leading contemporary painters, abstract expressionists, painters in the world, died a number of years ago, but his paintings go for tens of millions of dollars. And he's somebody that people don't know that he grew up as Mark Rothkowitz in Portland. Currently on view, Carrie Mae Weems, African-American photographer, born on Killingsworth, considered to be one of the top contemporary photographers in the world. The show goes from Portland, where it is today, to the Guggenheim in New York. All this to say is to say that culture in Oregon is an export that is just as important as beer, just as important as wine, just as important as the physical beauty of our state. There's a 2008 NEA study that says that Oregon is number 2 in attendance to cultural events. Connecticut number 1, Oregon number 2. Why is that? Well, I think it's because of the commitment that this state has had historically to culture and the impact that this trust has on funding projects like I've mentioned have been instrumental in getting those projects off the ground and making a difference in this state. One last point. The museum will see 300,000 visitors this year. 50,000 of those will be children. All children come for free, 17 and under. All school tours come to the museum for free. We also have $15 college passes for any enrolled college student. So we put a lot of things in support to make sure that audiences have access to the kind of culture that we're creating with help from the Cultural Trust. And thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the testimony, and I have a question for Ms. Rinaldi that maybe relates back to the previous testimony. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to go to an event where art was presented and its impact and its revenue impact on businesses and the nexus of Oregon and creating art businesses. And I think that, though hasn't really been spoken to directly, is really also relevant to this tax credit because the purpose of this tax credit isn't explicitly stated. And we tend to really think about the purpose of this to be bringing art and the humanities to the public. But it is also meant to create incentives and increase cultural development in Oregon. And I think that speaks directly to the presentation that I attended, and I was hoping that Ms. Rinaldi could speak to that particular study, because Oregon was included in this nationwide study on that sort of impact, and I think that study would be relevant for this committee to consider if she could send us a link to that. If you can speak to that, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Holvey. So it is true that I was project leader for conducting what is now a longitudinal study, really conducted through a national arts organization called Americans for the Arts. The study is called Arts and Economic Prosperity. The study was conducted in 2010, 2011. It was the first time that Eugene was a study site for the study. Typically between 175 and 200 communities are part of the study. Each of the four times it's been conducted. Now that it's been conducted a fourth time, it is technically a longitudinal study. We do have, I will leave this for you. It gives information about the economic impact in Eugene for the nonprofit art sector specifically, and it really only captures the impact of the organizations who participated. There were 36 out of 90 possible arts organizations that could have participated. And that impact, the total economic impact in Eugene is $46.6 million. It supports about 1,700 jobs in our community. The Regional Arts and Culture Council, which represents Portland and the Tri-County areas, also participated in the study. And so you can go to the RAC website and see what the economic impact is for the Tri-County area around Portland, Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas County. It picked up data from those three counties. And I know that Malian Pack, who is the development director for the Eugene Symphony, actually does, in her testimony, plan to talk a little bit about the economic impact of the arts. So you'll hear something about that from her, and we'll leave this behind for you. And there is a website that you can go to get full information about the study. Thanks for asking that question.
Representative Berger?
I think I'll hold my remarks until this panel's done. Okay.
Thank you. Diana Scoggins, Malian Pack, and Roberta Lavador, please.
Good afternoon, Chairman Garrett and members of the committee. Thank you so much for allowing me to provide you with comments today. My name is Diana Scoggins. I'm the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Youth Symphony in Portland, Oregon. I would like to speak a bit about the funding we have received from the trust and how that has impacted our organization. Briefly, MYS was founded 39 years ago. Our mission is to educate, develop, and promote young musicians. Access is one of our very core principles. We have a very strong tuition assistance program, and in an effort to reach as many students as possible, we provide programs for all ages, all levels of ability in orchestra, jazz, and band, all under one roof. This year we have 436 students. Just under half are from Multnomah County. The rest are from nine counties as far away as Tillamook. Specifically, MIS has received $9,500 in grant funds over the past 2 years from OCT for our jazz program. Rather amazingly, it was founded 10 years ago by Thera Memory, who just won a Grammy with Esperanza Spalding, who is also a member of our symphony orchestra when she was in high school. Cultural trust funding is so important to our core costs, supporting our conductors, our rehearsal space, our venues, buying sheet music. But most importantly, and very close to my heart, the Cultural Trust supports our school outreach efforts. The majority of our program, because we believe access is so important, participate in concert tours to schools that have limited music programs or high amounts of students who are on free or reduced lunch programs or ESL programs. We have performed at schools across a broad geographic spectrum: Madras, Warm Springs, The Dalles, Woodburn, Hillsboro, Beaverton, and North and East Portland. Last year alone, MYS students performed 17 outreach concerts, reaching over 5,000 students in underserved schools. Specific to this hearing, OCT funding enabled us to last year send jazz students to perform at Roosevelt High School and at Lincoln Elementary School in Woodburn, which is it's kind of the I-5 corridor, but not quite. funding this year will contribute to performances at Barnes, McKinley, and William Walker, schools that are low income in the Beaverton School District. So OCT funding over this two-year period will support 2,000 students hearing jazz concerts, interacting with MYS musicians, interacting with the conductors. In a very real way, OCT funding of our programs does reach Oregon schools, not only through our outreach program, but when our musicians are strengthened in their abilities and skills and go back to their schools and strengthen school music programs if they do have one. As relatively small as MYS is, we hire music educators, we employ administrative staff, we purchase advertising across multiple mediums, we pay rent to the Portland Public Schools for 10 months out of the year, we contract with PCPA and schools for concert venues, we work with printers, et cetera, et cetera. We are just one of the hundreds of arts organizations that provide economic benefits to those businesses that support arts organizations and their audiences. It's very timely that I speak to you today. I had the opportunity this weekend to attend the Northwest Music Educators Conference at the Oregon Convention Center. I spoke with multiple educators from Oregon who all expressed their passion for and concern over the state of music in our schools. Very interestingly, I spoke to 5 MYS alumni who are now teachers, and they're all teaching in the state of Washington. So that was very interesting to me to hear their story. The tax credit is such an important and innovative mechanism to ensure that we continue to build a climate that provides access to the arts and the benefits they provide for citizens of all ages. Thank you for your time. I would be pleased to answer any questions. And I would say we have some really fun quotes from students on the handouts that I gave you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Representative Garrett and committee. Thank you so much for having us here today. My name is Maylian Pock, and I'm here. I also passed out testimony. I'm here representing the Eugene Symphony. I'm also here to tell you that I would ask you to support House Bill 2470, a renewal of the legislation for the Oregon Cultural Tax Credit. In addition to the testimony I provided you, I'd like to tell you a story about two people that I've encountered over the last year who have been affected by the arts. One is a gentleman who is probably about 65. He is a participant in one of our programs called Play It Again, and he retired hadn't picked up an instrument for, I think he said, 40 years, and decided that he wanted to participate in creating music. So he picked up his French horn and joined a program that the symphony has called Play It Again. This program puts people who are amateur musicians, amateur adult musicians, into groups, into small groups with other people of like ability. We provide them with music, professional musicians who help them learn how to read music, how to engage in music. And the response from this one gentleman is that it has changed his life to be able to participate in that. And I think what's so powerful about the work that all of us do who are in the arts is that we can change lives and we don't even know how we're doing it. Another person that I wanted to talk to you about participated in a program called Link Up. He is in an after-school program in Springfield. He is at-risk, a low-income student who doesn't have the opportunity in his school to participate in music education. He, along with, I think, 10 other students in his classroom, had participated in a program that put recorders in their hands with a musician that taught them not only how to read music, but how to play music. And at the end of this 8-week session, they got to come and perform with the symphony in front of an audience of their peers. This young man went from being completely disengaged, sitting in the corner, to becoming an active participant in the class. And I think that those are the stories that really resonate with me when I think about why we need to support the arts. I do want to say that I think that not only is it a good decision to support a community, but it also helps support businesses. One of the things that I did bring that we'd be happy to share is the study from Americans for the Arts. And supporting the arts helps create jobs, but it also helps create tax revenues. The study that Tina talked about generates about of the Eugene organizations that participated in that study, we contribute about $2.4 million in local and state government revenues. So not only are we providing jobs, but we're also providing state tax revenues, and I think we should all be very proud of that. I also think that we should be proud of the fact that we're helping to fill the void that's created by the reduction of music education in classrooms, and I think that that is so important to the community. It has an immeasurable benefit that will outlast all of us, and for that reason, I ask people to support the Eugene Symphony and to support the Cultural Trust, because I know that those investments come back, and I don't know how much they come back, but I think that they come back to create change, and that's why I'm here to ask you to continue to support this tax credit, because I don't think that you know, and I don't think we can tell you all of the good work that this tax credit does for the state of Oregon. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
We'll wait till the end, and then we'll do the whole panel.
Yeah. Chairman Garrett, members of the committee, you can hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Roberta Lavador, and I'm the Executive Director at the Pendleton Center for the Arts. I don't know how many of you have visited our facility, but I hope you will drop in when you're in Pendleton. Pendleton is an interesting place with a robust arts community. In the 60s and 70s, Betty Fevis was a real force of nature in that region, and she brought art and music really to the forefront and set an incredibly high bar for delivery of services. She didn't just bring the Suzuki method of instruction to Pendleton, she brought Mr. Suzuki to Pendleton. Our Arts Council is the second oldest in the state, in 1974. And in 1998, they raised $2 million to renovate the old Carnegie Library. We have an amazing facility that rivals any in the Northwest. But my job is not to focus on the display of beautiful things in a beautiful facility. My job is to help encourage the infusion of arts and culture and creativity into the personal family culture of the people in our community. And there are several ways we do that. Many programs are done with the Oregon Cultural Trust help. And I just want to tell you about a couple of them real quick. One is called Art Rocks Teens. Kids 13 to 18 come to our center for free. They come 3 days a week after school, 3:30 to 5, when they're most at risk of shoplifting, getting into trouble, doing all those things that they do when they're not supervised. We do everything from garage band, skateboard design, jewelry design, costume design, along with drawing, sketching, and all those other things. In the summertime, we do a week-long rock and roll camp for them. They form bands last year, and they perform on Main Street for about 2,000 people. Last year, we had 22 bands play in 2 hours through that program, 80 kids. Starting this week, actually tomorrow, I have to drive home and do a program called Art Zoom, which is a new one. We are able to connect through Skype with our first classroom is the Heppner Culture Club. They don't have art in the Heppner School District, so they have a club of 15 kids that get to study art and culture after school. We're going to give them a tour of the gallery. We already shipped materials. They're going to do a little art project under our direction and hopefully gain a connection with our facility and what we do and help to support what they're doing. We do a program that the Oregon Cultural Trust supports called Free For All. Every Saturday, between 20 and 45 kids, 12 and under, come and do a free art project and with their families. And the classes that they support, these classes, the free classes, really provide a melting pot. You have families that seek out every single enrichment opportunity that's out there alongside families to whom tuition would be a huge barrier. And everybody's in there together socializing and doing it together. And these programs all take money. And our businesses in Pendleton have been very supportive, but they've been, a lot of the small businesses are tapped out. They've been hanging on for a long time, and they just aren't able to give in the way that they have in the past. Our demographic is changing, so the wealthy art patron that could write a check for several thousand dollars is not there, so we're trying to cast a wider and wider circle for smaller donors. And the Oregon Cultural Trust money is really, really important to us. We work with a residential treatment facility, Eastern Oregon Alcoholism Foundation. We had a volunteer resident come and help us out, and she walked in the building and said she didn't think she deserved to be in such a nice building. And that's a mindset that's really difficult for most of us to wrap our heads around. But one of the things that the Oregon Cultural Trust does, both through the tax credit and through the programs it supports, is it tells us that all Oregonians deserve that power of art and culture and creativity, that is part of who we are as Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
No, thank you.
Thanks to all three of you for being here today. We have three more, and that's it on this bill. Bob Speltz, Chris Darcy, and Jody Weiser, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Speltz. I live in Portland, and I'm the Director of Public Affairs for the Standard. I'm also pleased to chair the Board of Directors of the Oregon Cultural Trust. Some of you might know this, but the Trust started out of initially discussions between members of the business community and the cultural community, and as you heard earlier today, the challenge was how do we generate more giving for culture in the state of Oregon. The business community knows firsthand that arts, the heritage, and humanities create the kind of environment and the kind of communities where people want to live and want to work. They want to raise a family. And therefore, that's where businesses also want to locate, grow, and invest. As Oregon's third largest publicly traded company, the Standard and our employees invest close to $500,000 a year in arts and culture around the state. We appreciate that the legislature, through the Oregon Cultural Trust and the Cultural Tax Credit, has created a powerful incentive for individuals and businesses that increase giving to culture. So why is this important? The Cultural Trust grants that happen support the arts, the heritage, and humanities in every corner of our state. You've heard from others today about the cultural coalition supported by the Trust in each of Oregon's 36 counties and 6 of the 9 federally recognized tribes. The Trust's competitive grant program, available to arts, heritage, and humanities organizations around the state, helps to address some of our state's most pressing problems: education, safe communities, and lifelong learning. You've heard about a number of organizations today that have received significant help from the Trust. I want to tell you about one more. It's the Ethos Music Center in North Portland. The Cultural Trust awarded a $10,000 grant to Ethos that sent two AmeriCorps teachers to teach music in small rural schools. Since that grant was made, the program has grown to 10 teachers providing music instruction in 19 rural schools, including Fossil, Condon, Long Creek, Monument, Elkton, and Warm Springs. This is impacting close to 3,000 students. The AmeriCorps students volunteer their time and teach music, offer after-school music lessons, and organize performances by the students, as well as from groups visiting from out of state. In Portland, Ethos has become a hub for youth and families, providing affordable music lessons for students, many of whom qualify for free or reduced lunches. The Ethos Music Center includes a cafe, a performance hall, studios, classrooms, and more than 400 students took classes there last fall. They serve about 2,000 students a year, including students participating in a hip-hop lab who learn how to DJ, to mix beats, and make music videos. The Ethos building was actually boarded up and pretty run down when the nonprofit organization acquired it in 2005. Today, they're part of a revitalization on North Killingsworth Street and making their music students part of that success. I want to tell you about five statewide partner agencies that the Trust also partners with: Oregon Humanities, Oregon Historical Society, the Oregon Arts Commission, the Oregon Heritage Commission, and the State Preservation Office. These organizations help the Trust achieve its goal of increasing participation in culture across the state. The standard is actually located near the Oregon Historical Society, where thanks to a cultural partner grant from the Oregon Cultural Trust, the Historical Society now has a full-time education curator who develops programs that attract close to 10,000 school children a year. An additional 3,500 students and adults use the Historical Society's traveling trunks in their own communities. Over its 10-year history, the Cultural Trust has been seen as a national model for investing in culture. We think it's reflective of some of Oregon's other unique public policies, and I'll name a few. It's ranked with the Bottle Bill, the Beach Bill, and Vote by Mail as among our most innovative policies. Its practices are open, fair, and transparent, and welcoming of all types of groups. Involvement is encouraged in every county, in every tribe, and it creates value throughout our state and connects Oregonians to our history, our creativity, and the pulse of our communities. As you've heard today, the Trust unites a network of more than 1,300 cultural organizations that employ Oregonians who in turn pay state and local taxes, inspire our children, bridge our differences, bring visitors to our state, and transform our communities. The Standard is one of many businesses who support the passage of HB 2470 in the extension of our Oregon Innovative Cultural Tax Credit. I ask for the committee's support. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Garrett, members of the committee. My name is Chris Darcy. I'm the director of the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust. I'm very pleased to join a number of our other witnesses today to talk about what the Trust has been able to do over its short 10-year history. Oregon's cultural tax credit generates revenue for the Oregon Cultural Trust, which, as you've heard, supports a wide network of cultural providers. The credit was established as an incentive for Oregonians to generate more resources for our arts, our heritage, our history, and our humanities. Since 2002, Oregonians have used the tax credit to contribute over $30 million for Oregon culture. And as Senator Beyer suggested, this is not the $200 million that Ben Westland challenged us to raise, but we are very, very proud of what's been able to take place. In that same period, over $12 million has been awarded in grants. The balance remains in a trust fund that's managed now by State Treasurer Ted Wheeler. The Cultural Trust is Oregon's national model for integrated cultural funding. There is no other state that combines resources for arts, heritage, and humanities. We're very special. We're now recognized as a national model. The Trust distributes funding in three ways, as you've heard, an important network of 36 cultural coalitions in counties, six of the nine federally recognized tribes. We are the only state in the nation that recognizes tribes as equals with Western government. And again, we support five important statewide cultural partners. The tax credit has a solid multiplier effect. Every contribution to the Cultural Trust requires a contribution to a cultural nonprofit. And you've heard from small organizations and one of the major institutions in the state, these grants that are a result of these contributions are very important. Gifts are entirely voluntary and come from donors of all income levels. Donors to the Cultural Trust from high population counties are generating the important resources to support culture in our smallest and remote counties. In rural Oregon, this has been the largest investment in culture ever, ever. So we're very, very proud to have had the support of the legislature in creating this important program. Local beneficiaries include children, families, and organizations. And the impact of the tax credit and the Cultural Trust support of cultural groups extend way beyond the actual users of the credit. 6 million people experience culture in Oregon each year. Nonprofits like Oregon's flagship cultural giants, the Oregon Historical Society, and the Portland Art Museum, for example, in Portland's Cultural District, as well as Bag and Baggage, which has helped transform downtown Hillsboro, the resident companies of the Holt Center in Eugene, you heard from the Eugene Symphony, and small historical societies, all use Cultural Trust tax credit to leverage and expand their own critical fundraising. Trust grants enabled organizations like Josephine Community Libraries to acquire Spanish children's books and bilingual books for English language learners. And if you go on our website, we have an incredible video that talks about the powerful coming together of citizens to reopen libraries in Josephine County. And the funds generated from using the tax credit bring Oregon culture from our cities to small communities. Touring companies like Eugene Ballet, Body Box, bringing actors from the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. In addition to the grants that are funded for performances in home communities, these cultural organizations are providing important programs that can contribute to student learning. When you think about the assets of a Portland Art Museum, when you think about the Columbia River Maritime Museum in Astoria, when you think about OMSI, the High Desert Museum in Bend, these organizations, independent cultural groups, are providing incredible enhancement opportunities for students, training teachers, bringing families together to experience culture. No individual school or district would have the ability to do that. Senator Beyer mentioned the recently completed Echo Northwest study that looked at the impact of Oregon's cultural sector for the first time. And I'll remind you that these organizations generated over $580 million in sales into our economy. And just as a reminder, we have the largest regional theater company in the United States here in Oregon, the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. The same organizations provided over $270 million in wages to Oregonians. The cultural sector, according to many economists, including Echo Northwest, thinks that culture contributes to Oregon's ability to grow over the long run. Economists argue that arts and culture help boost the region's capacity to grow long-term by making individuals smarter and healthier and more productive, by contributing to a desirable quality of life that attracts workers like the ones at the Standard, and by helping to create a culture of creativity that fuels innovation. And we know that that's an important leg of the economic development strategy here. I want to go back and mention something that Senator Beyer mentioned, and that was the original timeline for building a permanent fund to sustain culture in Oregon. And we thought that it would take 10 years to build a $200 million fund. That was based on use of a tax credit, but also sales of a cultural license plate, and the assumed transfer of surplus state assets from the state to the Cultural Trust. That simply did not happen. So the tax credit has become a very, very critically important tool for building this fund for culture. Again, the trust has become a national model for its public-private partnership, its creation of local cultural coalitions, its bringing together multiple state entities, and its recognition of tribal governments. Other states have trust-like programs, but none as expansive as the Oregon Cultural Trust. We ask for your support of HB 2740 as proposed, 2470 as proposed.
Thank you. And before we go to Jody, Representative Berger has a question.
I have a specific question, and it may be in your material, but you referenced the license plate and the transfer of which didn't happen. The economy didn't go real good. And you said that the trust endowment hasn't grown as expected. What is the trust endowment right now? What was it expected, and how much of it is attributable to the license plate program? And if you don't have those answers on the tip of your tongue, maybe you could send it at some later time or point to me where it is in the material.
Chair Garrett, Representative Berger, I can give you a short answer. When the trust was created, it was assumed that we would reach a $200 million endowment fund over a 10-year period based on use of the tax credit, sales of license plates, and the transfer of surplus assets, land, from the state, and the land was to be the largest asset. The trust was given two pieces of land, one in Boardman, which the legislature recaptured in 2003. The trust is still slated to receive proceeds from the development of the Mill Creek property southeast of Salem. Over $16 million remains in the permanent trust fund as of December 31st, 2012.
Pardon me, Mr. Chair. Yeah. $16 million is in the endowment that was supposed to be $200 million, and how much of that is attributable to the license plates?
Chair Garrett, Representative Berger, several years ago, the legislature gave the trust permission to use license plate revenue for information communication across the state as opposed to strictly endowment building. The sale of license plates generates about $30,000 per month for the trust in that neighborhood.
Per month. And then, Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. can I pursue this? So it was slated to be for the endowment, but you have been authorized to use it for programmatic needs, and that's what you're doing.
Got it. Chair Garrett.
And when was that authorized? Which year?
I would have to get back to you with that answer.
And it's how much a month?
30.
Representative Berger, about $30,000 a month.
Per month. Thank you.
Just kind of on that line, I wanted to clarify what I thought I heard on the math. You said $30 million raised since the trust tax credit was established, and $12 million given out in grants. Was that what you said?
Well, no, okay. Wait a minute. That isn't what I did.
So $18 million of the amount directly contributed to the fund would have been retained.
That's correct.
Right. So then we have plus or minus investment earnings in addition to whatever additional revenue you've gotten from state assets or the license plates.
Chair Garrett, we are, for a while, the Cultural Trust was invested in a very short-term strategy by the state treasurer. The treasurer suggested that until we reached a balance of $10 million in the trust fund, that they would not be able to assist us with a more strategic investment plan. We reached that threshold. We exceeded that threshold. And in the process, the Treasury created what is called the Oregon Intermediate Term Pool, which is now performing considerably better than the previous investment instrument.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Holby, please.
Just a quick question. Do you think the license plate would bring in more money if they had a better picture?
Chair Garrett, Representative Holvey, the image on the cultural license plate is from a color field painting done by an Oregon artist. We know that the Department of Transportation, DMV, thinks that Oregonians want a variety of license plate options, and that's why the number of those specialty plates continues to grow every year. We have a very high rate of renewal by our users. Unfortunately, I can't control the bike plate, the wine plate, the other specialty blades.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to explore a bit the some of the attributes of your donor base, the people who make contributions. And I'm not certain exactly how to get at this, but I think one place to start would be to understand what percentage of your contributions come from people who make a contribution of at or very near the exact amount needed for the tax credit, the maximum amount of the tax credit, the $500 or $1,000 or $2,500, and then matching contributions to somewhere else to make that work. As compared to the number of people who make considerably smaller contributions than that, or those who make considerably larger contributions than that and forgo the credit on the additional amount. Can you give us a sense of that?
Chair Garrett, Representative Barnhart, you are correct that many of the donors to the Oregon Cultural Trust contribute at the level of the limit of the tax credit, because the credit has been a powerful incentive for them to give voluntarily to government after they have made at least, if not a larger, matching gift to a cultural nonprofit. So we know that it is the gifts from people of means in the larger population areas, Portland, Salem, Eugene, that enable the Oregon Cultural Trust to make the important investments that it does in rural Oregon. So in Wheeler County and in Gillum County, where those counties have populations of under 2,000 people, there simply is not the base of either business or individuals to generate the kind of revenue that the Cultural Trust has been able to place into those communities. We have also worked very hard to help cultivate a new generation of contributors to culture, knowing that, quite frankly, many of the original Cultural Trust donors are dying. We have worked with Willamette Week, for example, in the Portland area to be part of the Give Guide that's there that unites arts and cultural and social service and animal-friendly nonprofits to give at any level. And I know I sign every letter that goes out on behalf of the Oregon Cultural Trust, so there are young people who gave $5 last year. There is also a couple in Portland that gave $9,000 to the Oregon Cultural Trust last year. And there is everything in between. The tax credit has been a very powerful tool to get people to do something that they think is right for Oregon. And they really, we are recognized for the fact that our dollars, your dollars, they are Oregon's dollars, go into every county. When you hear about what's happening in the Warm Springs Reservation, when you hear about what's happening at Temustaluk on the Umatilla Reservation, and when you hear what's happening in Grant County, it's pretty incredible what those dollars do.
Mr. Follow-up, if I may. So I take it from your testimony that with a few exceptions, nearly all of your contributions come from people who either contribute the maximum amount for the credit or some smaller amount and take that as their credit. Is that what you're saying?
Chair Garrett, Representative Barnhart, there are donors to the Oregon Cultural Trust who give between $5 and $1,000 allowed by the tax credit. And there are Oregon corporations such as the Standard who will contribute at a level of $2,500 because that's the allowable credit for a C Corp. Mm-hmm. We have, knowing that our mission is really powerful, we have worked hard to reach out to individuals who care about the work of culture and who can be induced to give in addition to the tax credit. But many, many people who give to the trust give at the allowable levels for the tax credit. It's been a powerful tool for a voluntary contribution to government.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, perhaps we could get that data in a number form. That would be very high. I recognize you may not have it with you today, but it would be useful, I think, to have it. And let me, if I could switch topics. Could you describe a bit your strategy, your tactics for fundraising from existing donors at amounts above the amount that that the credit allows at this time. I mean, once you've got them in the door, they've heard what you spend your money on. Hopefully some of them have gotten excited about that, in addition to the fact that there's a tax credit attached, and would like to make a larger contribution.
Chair Garrett, Representative Barnhart, I'll give you one example. I'll give you an example of one strategy that we used just this past year. Knowing that the economy in the state is improving slowly and that the Cultural Trust was marking its 10-year anniversary, we looked at both donors who are current donors to the Cultural Trust and people who are prospective donors. We created something that we call the Pioneer Circle, and we reached out to some of the 1,300 cultural groups that the Trust serves to see if those groups would offer some kind of a special admission or a tour or a backstage kind of experience. And we put together a package of, let's just call them premiums, to encourage people to give up and above the tax credit, specifically at a level of $1,500 as opposed to $1,000. Our goal was to reach maybe 120 of these people over the course of the year. We are probably at the 30 level. So that was one. That's one strategy that we've used.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the chance to ask questions about the
topics.
Sure,
and if you could provide that information that Representative Barnhart mentioned, we'd, all the committee, we'd appreciate it. Just direct it to our staff. We have one more person to hear from. Thanks, Jody, for waiting, and then we'll take more questions.
Thanks.
Committee, I'm Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon, and it's, of course, hard to hear all of the wonderful things that are being done for culture in our state and say what I so often say about tax credits. But in fact, according to the Pew Trust report, giving in this state is $1.5 billion a year. The Cultural Trust is $3.3 million a year. We do have a interesting way to get government participation in cultural activities, and certainly the way we've organized that, you know, the use of that money is unique and wonderful, but it could be the same money coming out of the budget rather than coming as a tax credit. And I think the fact that there's the tax credit there with that top on it, that really makes people say, well, I've already given to these five organizations, I might as well get my tax credit. And in fact, that's how it operates for a lot of people. And I know a number of people who, when they realized that they weren't really donating to the Cultural Trust, they're really diverting their tax payment from the other things that government does to the Cultural Trust. It wasn't unique new money. It was just money that would otherwise have been sent to the Department of Revenue. Despite having 10% lower per capita income in this state, Oregon ranks 19th amongst the 50 states for our charitable giving. And I learned today that we have are second in the country for attendance at cultural events. And so you start to wonder, what is the problem we're solving? Because we have a lot of problems we're not ranking well in this state. We don't have any evidence that the trust has actually stimulated any new giving to other cultural organizations besides their own. Since an equal tax credit is received for donations to the trust, except those who donate above their amount, a growing number of Oregonians with tax liability, most recently 6,510, are learning that a way to decide where their tax money will be spent is the Cultural Trust. And in fact, the literature of the Cultural Trust says clearly in the solicitation letter I recently got from them, your gift to the trust costs you nothing, thanks to Oregon's cultural tax credit. Established in 2002 with the expectation that it would last 10 years, the trust has now had 21,000 donors. That's more than most nonprofits in the cultural field have. They've got a large donor base. And since most donors to the trust are likely itemizers, their giving is actually profitable to them and expensive to both the federal and the state revenue streams. In truth, the general fund is a source of the funds for the programs the cultural trust sponsors. Shouldn't legislators, not donors, control the budget? And should we be decreasing federal revenue? The chart on the paper that I provided shows that if you give $1,000, if I give $1,000, it looks like this. If I give $1,000 and $500 of it is to the cultural trust, so my $1,000 is going to the City Club or Third Rail Theater or the Historic Society or whatever I want to give it. My total donations are $1,000. The tax credit gives me back $500, and my federal itemized tax deduction gives me another $300. So really, my $1,000 in donations are only going to cost me $200. If I give $1,000 in donations without the tax credit, give the same amount of money, but I don't get the tax credit, my donation costs, my 2 or 3 or 10 donations would cost me $610. So what you've really done is created a way for mostly wealthy people to earn money, earn more than they've donated, because they get tax benefit from the feds and they get the tax credit from the state. And so it's a rather costly approach. I think you've seen this graph before, many of you, at least the tax credit committee people. It's broken down by 5% of population in the state by income group. And this large group at the bottom, it's the donors with incomes above $145,000 a year. So that's the people who are getting to use the system to actually make themselves better off, not necessarily improve things a whole lot. Because if you're going to give to culture, you're going to give to culture. And it's not costing you anything to give to the cultural trust. It's actually putting money in your pocket. So the cultural trust has had 10 years with 100% tax credits. And there is no other place where you can get that kind of a benefit, a tax benefit. We don't have 100% tax credits for other things. So here's the recommendation of Tax Fairness Oregon. We help the agencies learn to use the power of their 21,000 donors and actually build them into donors by weaning them off the 100% tax credit over a period of time that allows them to realize that, you know, we need a development officer like all the other major nonprofits have who are going to do the kind of work that brings in all the rest of the money. The typical donation is $900 to $1,000. So it's doing a tiny bit toward taking culture to rural communities, but it's not doing the major job. It's doing a tiny bit towards something that's happening at the art museum, but it's not doing the major portion of the job. The structure is fabulous for how they're passing money out and how my friends in Washington County who are on the commission and making the decisions feel good about what they're doing, and recognizing that we want culture everywhere makes really good sense. But the technique of using the tax credit is not really the best technique for what we should be doing. And other nonprofit organizations learn how to raise money, and the cultural trust needs to as well.
Okay, thank you. Representative Berger?
We're done with testimony.
We are done with testimony.
Okay, I have a couple of comments to make here. In anticipation, eventually this is going to get to the tax credit committee, and I didn't ask very many technical questions about the numbers, but they will come up, so you might be prepared. For instance, what percentage of your organization is funded by this, by the cultural trust tax credit as a percentage of your overall funding piece?
Just a heads up. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this tax credit works stunningly, and the organization around it is wonderful. I wish I could duplicate this across the board. My favorite charity is my local relief nursery, and what it does to the state bottom line is immeasurable. Every child that learns another way of living besides under the abuse that these children start with, and every parent who is taught a better way to parent, saves us unbelievable amounts of money down the line when we're not retraining and reincarcerating. I don't get a tax credit for my donation to that organization. And I have a constituent who writes me a letter a week saying, why aren't we doing this for all nonprofits? And I don't have a good answer for this. I really don't. I wish we could duplicate this for all of the things that we want to fund in this state. It is a wonderful program. If it works for the arts, imagine what it could do for all those small children whose needs are immeasurable. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Barnhart.
Thank you. If I want to follow up on Jody Weiser's comments and this little chart that she put together on the bottom of the first page of her written testimony. I want to just follow, take this logical next step. If I understand what you've described here correctly, if a person were to give $500 to the Third Rail Theater or the Salem City Club or any historical society, and that was the extent of their contribution, if I've done my calculation right, they would get $150 off of their federal taxes at 30%, mm-hmm. and probably $45 off of their state taxes at 9%, so that their actual taxes paid would be, I mean, sorry, their actual contribution net of their tax benefit would be $305. If I've done my arithmetic right, and I'm doing that quickly in my head as we do that. On your example, the additional contribution to the Cultural Trust of $500 allows you to take $500 off of your state income tax return, assuming you have that much liability. And then these other things you've calculated for a net cost of $200. If my object as a contributor is to benefit the Third Rail Theater, I can do that and actually save myself $105 by making the additional contribution of $500 to the Cultural Trust. I think that's your point, mm-hmm. isn't it? Mm-hmm. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, if I'd simply comment on that, a shrewd investor who wants to make a contribution to another charity like the Third Rail Theater, who went through this little exercise that we've just gone through, would find it very prudent to make that additional $500 contribution to the trust, but not a penny more, unless there was some indication in the trust itself that there was something that elicited the charitable reflex on the part of that particular taxpayer. And I think that's an issue that I think we need to explore as we consider what we're going to do with this particular tax credit. I think when the legislature, and I would love to hear more from someone else who knows this stuff better, remembers it better than I do. I think that the 10-year time period was put on this one, not because there was a limit on tax credits at that time, because there wasn't, but rather because we thought that, or the legislature at that time thought that this was the period of time that would be necessary in order to fully fund the endowment fund.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Kenemer, and then I want to close this up so we have time for the other bill we need to hear today.
Yeah, I guess I appreciate everybody coming to testify. I guess part of my takeaway from this is in my experience with tax credits, is that for me and lots of other people, they're often the nudge we need to do the right thing. And I think in some of the other competition, a lot of these needs would be diminished and not rise to the level of general fund funding. So that's why I think this is a really great thing. It helps get a lot of needs around the state, legitimate but very different needs. I think it's neat that kids in Heppner have a chance at the arts. The kids all throughout this state, rural and urban, need those kinds of opportunities. And I'm grateful for this credit. I'm a big supporter of it. I think this program does wonderful things. I think most of those tax credits do wonderful things. And I think it's another way we can help meet the needs that are out there.
Well, thanks again. I want to thank everybody who came in today to testify about this. Appreciate your commitment and your advocacy. And we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2470. And we're going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2407 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2471, which are the same bill. And we have just four people on the list for this. We'll start with Joe Basler and Soren Metzger, please. Go ahead, describe the bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2471 and House Bill 2407 both extend the sunset on the political tax credit to January 1, 2020.
Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Representative Garrett, members of the committee. My name is Joe Basler. I represent Oregon AFSCME, with the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. And we come to support, I was going to make a joke about which bill we were going to support, but I think it's probably, it wasn't very funny, so I'm not going to do it. I hope you appreciate that. I spend a lot of my time when I'm not here talking to members and trying to get them engaged in the political process. You would think, being that we represent public employees, that would be easy. It is not. It's very hard to even get folks in the room to talk to them about why they should care, and then it's very hard to get them to care after you get them in the room. We ask for political contributions because dues money cannot be spent on federal candidates, so we have to ask for an additional voluntary contribution on top of dues. And so when we do that, we spend a lot of our time sort of talking about why they should care. And I don't think the political tax credit is the cure-all, and they go, oh, great, well, I get $50. Of course I care about politics. But it is that extra little push, that extra little, the thing I say after I give my heartfelt pitch and they ignore me, I say, but you can get $50. So it's become an important part of our political program, and I think our folks see it as it's a tax credit any of them can use. It's something for working folks. They have $50 is not out of their out of the sphere of what they can imagine themselves donating. So that's pretty much it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Soren Metzger, and I'm with the Oregon School Employees Association, testifying in support of House Bills 2407 and 2471. Oregon School Employees Association represents about 20,000 classified school employees here in Oregon. We urge your support of these bills because they protect the voice of educational assistants, custodians, secretaries, and school bus drivers throughout the state. The median annual income of an OSCA member is just over $20,000. And in my experience, going out and talking to members, and offering them the tax credit is giving them another avenue to participate in the democratic process. When OSCA members can get their $50 back at the end of the year, they're not faced with a difficult decision of whether they should buy that week's gas or groceries or have a voice in the political process. So please help to protect their voice and allow them to be involved in the democratic political process as much as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for keeping your testimony brief, given the hour. We have questions for this panel? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Do you know the average or the mean or the median income of your members?
I think roughly. I'm right. Yeah, it's about $32,000.
Okay. And ours is just over $20,000.
Just slightly over 20,000.
Slightly over 20,000.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And you mentioned that this is something that's useful for your workers, although I think we did hear from Mr. Alanak that the vast majority of the fiscal impact of the credit is accounted for by people who make far more money than that.
Absolutely. And I Joe Basergen, I don't think that I'm sure not a lot of my members use it, but I can tell you anecdotally that there would be a handful of members who, you know, not really paying attention, gets them focused, and then we keep following up. We keep having that conversation. And, you know, I think there's a subset that really, this is really the only way that to reach them.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you both. Cappy Eaton and Jody Weiser, please. Excuse me.
Bless you.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Cappy Eaton, the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. For your information, the League is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages citizen participation in government. I'm commenting on HB 2407 today, and in the interest of public disclosure, you should know that the League has conflicting positions on this tax credit. So we're going to neither support it or oppose it at this particular time. First of all, this tax credit currently has a fiscal impact of $14.7 million on the general fund. We usually support the repealing or the rejection or the revision of tax expenditures which have a negative impact on the general fund, unless they have a specific social goal and consequence. On the other hand, this is our confliction, the political tax credit does promote and enable citizens to participate in the elections process. So you see our dilemma. We have two questions. Well, incidentally, there are about 8% of taxpayers actually use this tax credit. So our two questions are, is this credit fair based on the demographics in Oregon as to who uses this political tax credit? Is it spread across geographic? Is it spread across income levels? These kinds of questions. And the second question is, should actually the discussion of this tax credit be part of the larger discussion about campaign finance reform? So finally, the League would be open to a consideration of a stipulation in the extension of the tax credit if it was limited to measures only. So I thank you for this chance to make a comment about HB 2407.
Thank you. I think the dilemma you feel is felt by some of us, too. In fact, I bet most of us up here have encouraged people to take advantage of this tax credit at one time or another. But Jody, go ahead.
Yes, you sure have, because I got loads of emails from all sorts of organizations and individuals. Jody Weiser with Taxpayers Oregon. So, but testimony is just this. 46% of the use in dollars is by people who's by taxpayers, we don't know in this breakdown which ones are single and which ones are filing jointly, have incomes above about $90,000.
What was the number?
$90,000. And so the idea that seems to make the best sense would be to means test it. It won't affect how much either one of us give.
Oh. That's for sure.
And yet it's there for the people who actually it works for. And it wouldn't need to be as expensive, and it wouldn't matter. It's kind of one of those things that shows that government's kind of silly to people who are in a position to look at it that way, rather than the people who go, thank gosh, if I have $50 now, you know, later I'll have $50. That's a hard thing right there for a lot of people. But it seems like we could means test it, and you could do it by, you know, the way a lot of means testing is done is like assuming that two people live more cheaply than one. You would say 60 and 100,000 or 70 and 100,000 or 75 and 125,000 or whatever.
Okay, thank you. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jody and Kathy, actually, both of you. $50 is a lot to some and not much to many, but it is a very small credit on an individual level. So don't you think that in some sense this small number shows a motivation for people at all income levels to engage directly in the political process? This is what I worry about on this particular credit, is that it isn't about the money, it's about your engagement. And if you've written a check,
that's right,
be it to a candidate or you are thereby saying, I noticed, I engaged, and I am committed to whatever it is or whoever it is you're and somehow that has value to me. Does it to you? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, that's the problem for the League, because we do what we would like to involve, have more people involved. You know, 8% is not very many across the board, and that's an interesting statistic. You have almost 50% of them have a $90,000 plus income. So if you keep it, how do you use it to engage people in the political process? That, to me, that's the major question.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, it is by its fact, and the fact that people use it at all, even if it's only 8%, those 8% are committed enough to our process to write a dang check. And it isn't a very big check, but it shows a real commitment. Any check's a commitment.
It's a talking point.
And then a lot of people give more, but I guess they're, as per our discussion on an earlier tax credit, there are a lot of people who give a lot more and then only take the 50%, and I think all of us in this room know who those people are. So I hate to take the little guy and the big guy's way of making a I care enough statement by signing a small check and getting a credit for it away from this process.
There was definitely, you know, that was part of the consideration when we were talking about this tax credit, Tax Fairness Oregon. Two Sundays we've discussed it. And there was nobody in the group who felt like it had changed their behavior. But these
are
people,
pretty wonky.
They're pretty engaged group of people, you know. And so we're not a good sample. We know we're not a good sample. And so, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, I remember it took 3 years for me to get my CPA to give me the credit. I finally said, now, Pat, I'm giving you this political tax credit, and if you don't forget to put it on my form this time, I'm taking it out of your pay. And, of course, he remembered it then. And it was obviously not affecting mine. But I'm not typical. And so it's hard to know. I mean, you guys probably know better because you use it, whether you think that there are a significant number of people who give it their first check to you. And if it works, and I suspect it does, that there are a lot of people who have liked you at the door and written you a check, and that was the very first check they ever wrote. And it engaged them in a process. And so, you know, there's no doubt that we think that the idea is sound, but it's a day of school too, and so there you are at the balance. It's not going to make any difference to most of the people in those last three brackets whether they get the $50 or not. They're going to give the same amount. It's how many calls you make to them that decides it.
Thank you both. It looks like that is it for our questions. We appreciate you both being here and everybody else who testified. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2471 and 2407. We have one more item of business, which is open a work session on introduction of committee measures. Ms. Seiler, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have LC 2897, which revises definition of employment relations for purposes of collective bargaining for introduction today.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that the following LC be introduced as committee bill, LC 2897, relating to local authority to administer an employee benefit for certain employees.
Vice Chair Hoyle moves that LC 2897 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. No further business before the committee. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Nicely done.